It's Tuesday, July 20th. Industry Minister Tony Clement says he won't back down on a plan to make the long-form census voluntary, even though experts say the move will lead to skewed and unreliable data. Currently, Clement argues that the government's decision was based on a scientific survey of irate callers to radio phone-in shows. This is The Current.
Good morning, I'm Jim Brown. You're listening to the summer edition of The Current. If you've been poached from the private sector and brought into a huge federal bureaucracy to make billions of dollars worth of cuts, you're going to make some enemies. If you're being paid about 2.5 times the salary of your new colleagues to do it, you're not going to be the most popular guy in the elevator in the morning. But if it turns out that the senior government people who hired you don't have your back, well, then you've got serious problems. We're going to meet two men who found themselves in that position this morning. Later, we're going to take you into the world of dumpster diving. That's coming up. But first, the Fall Guys. Doug Tipple was hired to save the government billions, but by the time the final tally is made, his treatment in the public service will cost the Canadian government and taxpayers millions. About 4 years ago, he was headhunted from the private sector to carry out huge reforms in the Public Works Department. 1 year into his 3-year contract, he was fired. CBC has learned that late last week, the Public Service Labor Relations Board ruled the senior public servant's dismissal was a sham and a cover-up, a termination orchestrated to protect the government and avoid scandal. CBC reporter Julie Ireton has been digging into this story for more than a year. She is the 2010 Michener Deakin Fellow investigating issues in the federal public service, and she joins me from Ottawa. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with the basics. Who is Doug Tipple?
Doug Tipple is 60. He's from Toronto, a real estate guru with 30 years experience. He's an MBA and a professional engineer with an outstanding resume, having worked as a senior executive in the real estate departments at CN and Canada Lands Corporation and Bell Canada.
And what exactly was he hired to do?
Well, back in the fall of 2005, Tipple was headhunted by the government at a cost of $230,000, and his job was to figure out a way to reform the Public Works Department's real estate arm and save the government $1 billion over 5 years.
And he wasn't the only person hired from the private sector by the Public Works Department at the time, right?
Right. David Roeder was also hired at the same level as Tipple, a senior advisor to the deputy minister. Roeder would work very closely with Tipple on reforms, and he'd lose his job at the exact same time under the exact same circumstances as Tipple. So it's important to tell their stories in tandem. But just to be clear, David Roeder hasn't gone through the Public Service Labor Relations Board process yet, but their cases are very similar, and Roeder sees Tipple's vindication as a vindication for both of them.
Okay, so tell us about Roeder. What was his background?
David Roeder is 45, also from the Toronto area, and when he was hired by Public Works, he'd most recently worked in the private sector, but Roeder also spent 9 years as a logistics officer in the Canadian military. In early 2006, his new job was to massively reform the government's procurement system, basically change the way the government buys stuff. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the blurb advertising his job read, "Bottom line, you will spur savings in the order of $2.5 billion over 5 years." And the department dubbed the plan the way forward.
Okay, so both men moved their families to Ottawa to start planning dramatic cuts to save the federal government billions of dollars. Why did the government bring people in from outside the public service to do this?
Well, you know, both men say it would have been difficult for career bureaucrats to bring in these kind of changes and to do it fast. But experts who keep a close eye on the public service say Roeder in particular was given a task that would attract some enemies, saving $2.5 billion $1 billion over 5 years was going to mean a lot of change. Big business lobby ensued, unions were on high alert, but some people within the department were also annoyed. It turns out they might have been too good at their jobs. Here's Doug Tipple.
We overachieved the Way Forward's financial targets within the first year. So that encompassed a whole variety of things from fit-up standards to leasing standards. So it was a culmination of a variety of activities that resulted in the savings.
Were you proud of what you were doing?
Absolutely. And, I had a very good team at Real Property that assisted me. This was not a one-man effort.
Were there people in the department that were concerned about the cuts? Unions?
Oh, absolutely, sure. Anytime that you're affecting an organization in that manner, there are always concerns that need to be dealt with.
So, Julie, what kinds of concerns is he referring to?
Well, first, they'd bypassed the usual pecking order in the department's hierarchy to get their high-paying jobs.
And how high are we talking here?
Both men were making more than $300,000 a year, and that wasn't including bonuses, which they also received, a lot more than your average bureaucrat. In fact, more than 2.5 times more, according to one public service expert. So public servants who'd been passed over for those jobs were annoyed, which may help explain some of the internal leaks to the media that later occurred.
Yeah, what kind of stories were being leaked?
Well, back in the summer of 2006, about half a year into their new jobs, Doug Tipple and David Roeder were asked by the deputy minister to take a working trip to Britain to see how officials there reformed real estate and procurement programs. As Doug Tipple and David Roeder will explain, this trip erupted into somewhat of a scandal for the department. In mid-July, the Globe and Mail reported this headline, quote, "Federal advisors' trip to Britain raises ire." This trip is referred to as a junket. They're accused of taking their wives on the taxpayers' dime. They're accused of missing several meetings, and it turns out that their wives actually paid their own way. Although there were a few logistical issues involved with meetings, they say they were so busy in London they didn't have time to even spend time with their spouses.
And this Globe article wasn't the only article that emerged.
This was just the first of several media reports and editorials. Opposition members of Parliament called for a public hearing into the UK trip. This was being compared in the media to the sponsorship scandal, the first potential scandal at the time for the governing Conservatives, a scandal they really wanted to avoid.
Okay, so in the middle of all of this, why didn't Doug Tipple and David Roeder speak up for themselves?
They were advised by the ministry not to speak to the media. I asked Doug Tipple what it was like for him being in the headlines.
I was in despair. I mean, it really was a totally false portrayal of my activities.
The articles also said that you took took your wife on taxpayers' dime.
Totally false.
And that you plagiarized your trip report.
Again, totally false.
How did the government respond to these articles?
The government had numerous opportunities in which to produce this report, the Mintel report that I referred to, and other reports exonerating me, and never did. It was a bit surreal at times, and I kept waiting for the real story to emerge.
So basically, these two guys are just waiting for the government to stand up in their defense.
Yeah, and virtually nothing happened. The government reacted as little as possible. The Deputy Minister of Public Works testified during the Labour Board hearings that it was the Cabinet Minister's office that was in charge of the communications plan with the media. The Minister of Public Works was Senator Michael Forche, and he was not an MP, but he'd been parachuted in as a minister of the department by Prime Minister Harper. Now, neither Forche nor the deputy minister ever spoke out in defense of Tipple and Roeder. The Public Service Relations Board later found that there was never a media plan to deal with the unfolding scandal.
And then the men were fired.
Yes, just 2 weeks after the first Globe and Mail report was published, less than 1 year into a 3-year contract, the government terminated their contracts. The deputy minister would later call it a layoff. The next day, the Globe had the story, quote, "Public Works advisors sent packing." Here's how David Roeder describes the impact the ordeal had on him.
It was a very difficult time. In fact, on the way home from getting fired, I had to stop at my children's new school to meet the teachers. I hadn't had the opportunity to tell my wife we had been fired. The following Monday, my children started school with my face on the front page of the newspaper. It was very difficult. People stopped taking my calls. It was a very difficult time. It was really only through the kindness of colleagues who knew me well that we were able to survive for the next couple of years.
What was it like finding work after that?
As I said, people didn't take my calls. People who were close to me who would take my calls, very often the first thing I would see on their desk is the newspaper articles, and these are people who would agree to meet with me, still wanted to know the story. However, you know, time moves on, and my record stands for itself, and even if people were suspicious about it, I have been able to piece together a career, certainly not the career I had, but I've been able to piece together a career.
Okay, that's David Roeder. What about Doug Tipple? What was his reaction?
He was stunned.
Yeah, I was totally shocked. I mean, at one moment I was a trusted advisor to the government, and the next minute I was, you know, wrongfully terminated. So, very shocking.
Do you feel there's still a lot of mystery, a lot of unanswered questions?
Oh, I think the decision raises a host of questions that should be answered.
Do you think you'll ever have those answers?
I doubt it. I think many of the people that were involved are no longer with the government.
Julie, you can really hear the frustration in their voices.
Mm-hmm. And that frustration and public humiliation led both men to sue. They filed separate claims in court, but the government said the case must first go before the Public Service Labor Relations Board. Doug Tipple's case was heard first, off and on, over the past 4 years. Now, I attended a number of the hearings throughout the Labor Board process, and the information that came out was quite revealing and shocking, actually. For instance, let's go back to those Globe and Mail articles. Evidence brought forward before the Labor Board showed that the reports were based on incorrect and misleading information leaked to the reporter by an unnamed source, a Public Works insider, a woman who was later identified after a long internal investigation uncovered the leak. In reaction to the leaks to the media, the government lawyer Michael Chevalier told the Labor Board, quote, "What were we supposed to do, put hockey tape on every member of the public service so they didn't say anything about Mr. Tipple?" And like I mentioned earlier, the Labor Relations Board released its decision to Tipple on Friday.
So what are some of the key findings?
Well, in his review of the case, the Labor Board adjudicator said it appeared the Department of Public Works had one goal, to protect its own interests by ensuring there would be no scandal that would embarrass the government. And that by not reacting, the government inferred the men were guilty of these crimes.
All right. What else was discovered at the Labor Board?
Well, it revealed that there was a report called the Minto Report, which was completed on August 31st, 2006. And in it, the Public Works Department's chief risk officer, Shahid Minto, vindicated the men and their trip. That report was delivered to the deputy minister the same day they lost their jobs, but the report was never made public. And during the Labor Relations Board hearing, a government lawyer went to painstaking lengths to explain that Roeder and Tipple had never done anything wrong on that UK trip and that their termination was really a layoff. But again, this isn't what the government was saying publicly at the time. It just doesn't jibe with the political reaction to the so-called scandal. Just a couple months after the men were let go, an NDP Member of Parliament, Peggy Nash, stood up in the House of Commons and asked the government why there wasn't a report explaining the actions of Tipple and Roeder and their trip to the UK. At the time, Conservative MP James Moore stood up in the House and spoke for the government. Here's what he said.
Honourable the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Public Works and Government Service.
Well, the two people in question that the member is referencing that the minister talked about today at committee were in fact held accountable and they no longer work for the federal government.
Honourable member.
Well, that kind of goes against the department's assertion that they were simply laid off.
Yes, and MP Moore didn't mention the various reports that had been produced and had cleared Tipple and Roeder of any wrongdoing. It appeared the government wanted to place blame on these men and make it clear that they'd been dealt with. But perhaps the strangest thing of all, the deputy minister at the time, David Marshall, said when it came to Tipple and Roeder, performance wasn't an issue. In fact, just 9 months into their contracts, the government of Canada was saving more money than they had expected, and change was occurring too fast. So the experiment wasn't working. The guys had to be let go.
So the deputy minister leaves the impression that these men were laid off because they were doing too good a job.
It's true. Their performance ratings were high, and they'd both received the maximum allowable bonus, 15% of their salaries, just weeks before they were let go.
Okay, so these two men are hired to cut and saved millions, I guess billions of dollars at Public Works. What has terminating them in this way cost the government?
Well, a government official says just collecting together the 6,000 pages of documents for the Labor Board hearings cost the taxpayer close to $500,000. The year-long investigation at Public Works into who leaked incorrect or incomplete information to the Globe and Mail would have cost a lot of time and money, not to mention the cost of several lawyers and Labor Board staff, the adjudicator over the past 4 years, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And add to all that the damages awarded to Tipple alone by the Labor Board.
And how much in damages are we talking here?
More than $1.3 million, and that's just for Tipple. Roeder's case is yet to be heard. But remember, the circumstances are very similar.
Wow. So break down those damages a bit. Why did the board award so much money to Tipple?
Well, he's awarded lost wages, lost performance bonus, lost benefits, plus interest on all of that, $125,000 for psychological injury, plus interest, and more than $250,000 for lost reputation. So all that adds up to more than $1.3 million, almost unheard of for a labor board decision. Up until this point, the largest amount awarded in damages was less than $200,000.
Now, I'm curious, what has all of this done to Tipple and Roeder's reputation?
Well, both men have had a very difficult time securing work. I'll let Doug Tipple explain.
Well, it's been very difficult. Part of my role in the real estate committee and sort of executive committee at large is at a very senior position. The allegations of wrongdoing and implications of unethical behavior really preclude you from performing senior roles, either as an executive or at the board level. So it was difficult in sort of resuming the activities that I had been used to and wanted to continue to perform.
It was difficult getting work after the termination.
Absolutely.
This story isn't exactly an ad to get private sector people helping out in government, is it?
It's not. No, serves as a warning.
So in the final analysis, how did the Labor Board adjudicator sum up his findings?
The adjudicator, Dan Quigley, didn't pull any punches when it came to the treatment of Doug Tipple, especially by the man in charge of the department at the time, the Deputy Minister David Marshall. Quigley writes that Marshall acted in a disingenuous and callous manner in terminating Tipple's employment. He says, "I find that such conduct was unfair or in bad faith by being untruthful, misleading, and unduly insensitive to Mr. Tipple."
Okay, you said Marshall is the former Deputy Minister. Where is he now?
Well, the Prime Minister appointed Marshall as the High Commissioner to Barbados, not long after Tipple and Roeder were dismissed. That term is over. Marshall no longer works for the government. He's now actually president of the Workplace Safety and Insurance Board, but he was unable to comment.
Now, what does the government and the Department of Public Works say about all of this now?
Well, the office of the current Public Works Minister did not respond to our request for comment. The Labor Board said it could not comment, but I will certainly keep you posted if I hear anything from any of them.
All right. Julie, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's Julie Ireton, CBC reporter and 2010 Michener Deacon Fellow investigating the public service. She was in Ottawa. Now, if you have any thoughts about this story or anything else that you've heard on The Current, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email. Just go to our website at cbc.ca/thecurrent, all one word, and click on the Contact Us link. You can call us toll free. The number is 1-877-287-7366. That number once again, 1-877-287-7366. You can tweet us on Twitter at The Current CBC. And finally, you can send us a letter. Our address is P.O. Box 500, Station A, Toronto, Ontario, M5W1E6. Coming up tomorrow on The Current, we're going to take a look at the upcoming Rwandan election. Critics say President Paul Kagame's government has arrested and killed members of the opposition and is clamping down hard on the media. But the government denies any involvement in the killings and says it is cracking down on opponents only because they are promoting ethnic hate. We're going to speak with an opposition party leader who is currently under house arrest in Kigali. This is part of our ongoing summer series on African independence, and you can hear that tomorrow morning on The Current. Now, coming up in our next half hour, they say that one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, in Darren Atkinson's case, it's also his job. We're going to take you into the world of dumpster diving. I'm Jim Brown. You're listening to the summer edition of The Current.